to the DI Group. For most of my life, I've been fascinated by history, particularly the stories of the American presidents. Over the years, I've tried, often in vain and in misguided ways, to integrate my love of presidential history with our work in developing leaders and companies. Now, using the podcast format, I can take my time exploring how this particular sliver of our past can inform how we lead in our day-to-day lives, without having to always focus on a practical and behavioral outcome. Those of you who are interested can follow the stream. Feel free to comment, feel free to participate. Those who aren't, well, we'll have more functional topics as well. The next several podcasts I do will focus on leadership lessons I've learned. I'll endeavor to tell, or retell for that matter, the stories that connected with me. Each podcast will target one specific lesson, but of course, no story is limited to just one lesson. Take from it what you will. This first one tells the story of Vice President John Tyler and his journey to step into the shoes of President William Henry Harrison. Feel free to email us with any comments, as I said. We would love to know what you think. And so, our lesson for this cast, own your authority. After nearly a half century, after eight men had served as presidents without mortal incident, the ninth, William Henry Harrison, died in office, 32 days after his inauguration. John Tyler took over, but there was no precedent. The Constitution was quite vague. It wasn't clear whether the vice president became the president in title and power, or if he simply had the power, but not the title. The vice president's only given authority was to preside over the Senate and break any ties. He had no other role in government except as the president's understudy. In fact, the VP was relegated in nearly all cases as a bystander. He wasn't even a part of the president's cabinet. So when Harrison died, Tyler had no prescribed set of action to take. He immediately went to the White House and took the oath of office, though. Daniel Webster, Harrison's Secretary of State, pulled the new president aside and told him that Harrison's policy was to take a cabinet vote when making decisions and rely on the majority. Good for Webster, right? Tyler responded famously, "I beg your pardon, gentlemen. I am very glad to have in my cabinet such able statesmen as you have proved yourselves to be, and I shall be pleased to avail myself of your counsel and advice, but I can never consent to being dictated to as to what I shall or shall not do. I, as president, shall be responsible for my administration. I hope to have your hearty cooperation in carrying out its measures. So long as you see fit to do this, I shall be glad to have you with me. When you think otherwise, your resignations will be accepted." The debate over Tyler's legitimacy cannot be overestimated. Henry Clay, a member of Tyler's own party, the Whigs, referred to his administration as a mere regency. Both the Senate and the House put forth amendments that failed to refer to Tyler as vice president still, and not president. His new nickname was His Accidency. John Quincy Adams argued Tyler should be called the acting president. Part of Tyler's problem was, well, he was sucky at playing politics. Prior to his ascendancy to the vice presidency, he was a Jacksonian Democrat. He had a strong dislike for John Quincy Adams, and as a result, sided with Andrew Jackson. But soon after Jackson's election to office, Tyler split with him over the tariff of 1828. And that split turned rabid over the banking issue in 1832, and Tyler fell into the open and willing hands of the new Whig Party. Tyler was a strict states' rights guy, and the Whigs were themselves schizophrenic, splitting across several values and principles. They were united in opposing Jackson's successor, however, Martin Van Buren. But at their nominating convention in 1840, they couldn't even agree to get behind a single candidate. Harrison, Henry Clay, General Winfield Scott all vied for the nomination. But the Northern Whigs hated Clay, and the Southerners weren't so hot to support Scott's abolitionist tendencies. The nomination then went to Harrison, with Tyler getting the VP nod, and that was in of itself a compromise. Children sang patriotic and inspirational songs about the Harrison that they knew, but the lyrics we hear also illustrate how little in esteem Tyler was held. Among them, We shall vote for Tyler, therefore, without a why or wherefore. The Whigs didn't even bother to put together a platform as well, fearing that doing so would tear them apart. This was the election that brought us the famous slogan Tippecanoe and Tyler II. The Whigs won overwhelmingly, taking both houses as well. Arguably, this was a vote against Van Buren as much as it was support for the Whigs. Then Harrison died. And from what would have been a mere historical footnote of a vice presidency, John Tyler becomes the 10th president. Tyler, however, never wavered in his assuredness of status. He was, by right and constitutional design, the president of the United States as far as he was concerned. If correspondents, for example, to the White House arrived with the title acting president or some variant, it was returned, unopened. Tyler's presidency was objectively, though, a failure. He rejected what Whig policies were there and openly fought with Henry Clay. His cabinet all resigned after Tyler vetoed the National Banking Act a second time. With deficits in the millions, he led a failed fiscal policy that was in direct contrast to the Congress, also led by his fellow Whigs. The House tried to even impeach him, but couldn't muster enough votes. His own party. The Whigs believed the president should allow Congress to set policy. Tyler, contrary to his states' rights view, took action that supported a stronger executive officer, not unlike previous and future presidents would do. And these were but a few of the battles that marked his administration. Tyler just didn't play well with others. What is important, what is vital, is Tyler's response to his ascendancy to the presidency. It is Tyler's firm hand and his rejection of all who called for a weakened office that set the precedent for all future elevations when presidents died or resigned, in Nixon's case. It isn't very hard to imagine Tyler succumbing to the pressure to simply be the, quote, acting president, or to defer to his own party in Congress as they set policy. If you put yourself in his shoes, how would you have reacted? Remember, no one had ever stepped into the presidency this way before. Giants of the time, Clay, Webster, Adams, and others were clamoring for you, the compromise of a vice president, to let the big boys run things. Remember, the vice presidency had never been anything other than a sitting place for an until now never used understudy. The pressure to fade into the background must have been immense for Tyler. But that isn't what he did. Tyler is a vital part of American history because he assured that the transition was seamless and without incident for future administrations. When Zachary Taylor died just a few years later, no one worried about Millard Fillmore's legitimacy. Same with Lincoln to Johnson, Garfield to Arthur, McKinley to Roosevelt, and so on. Tyler assumed his power, assumed his status, and assumed his right to the authority. He took control. His execution afterwards, well, not so good. But he became a model for all leaders to recognize that power and authority have to be co-opted, have to be assumed if followers are indeed going to follow. As President, Tyler didn't do very much good, but his journey to the office was an astounding example of leadership we can grasp as a model to embrace. All right, then. So what? So what conclusions can you draw from Tyler's actions? Well, number one, it's up to you to recognize your limits and your power. If you don't take it, no one will simply give it to you. In business, government, or anywhere else, it's up to you to assert your authority. Conversely, as we will see with other presidents like Richard Nixon and Andrew Johnson, if you overassert, trouble will also ensue. So number two, pay attention to the political landscape and be aware of what you can get away with. Balance is the key. From Tyler's failures, we learn a lot about what happens when you burn bridges and cut off your allies. Tyler started from behind an eight ball, and once in office made it all the more difficult for himself. Number three, vacuums will be filled. Had Tyler not asserted his authority, Congress and his fellow Whigs would have defined both the presidency and Tyler. Tyler would have lost not only what little credibility he had, but also never would have had a chance to lead the government. He would have been rendered either a puppet to Clay or a ragdoll kicked around by Congress. As VP, he had already been imagined as an impotent figure to Harrison's heroic visage. Therefore, define yourself. Don't let others define you. So, based on this story, what other lessons do you take away? And what other lessons can you apply to your own leadership, to others as you develop them? Send us your comments. I'm Matt Richter, and this is the first of our Presidential Leadership Lessons series. Hope you enjoyed it.